Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the March 18th, 2021 meeting of the Upper Marion Township Board of Supervisors. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll begin with roll call, starting on my far left.
Tina Garzillo.
Carol Kenny.
Bill Genoway.
Greg Wax.
Leanna Clubriel, Township Engineer.
Tony Hamaday, Township Manager.
Joe McGorry, Township Solicitor.
We will begin tonight with a series of meeting minutes for adoption. These include the September 3rd, 2020 Zoning Workshop, September 3rd, 2020 Workshop, October 8th, 2020 Zoning Workshop, October 8th, 2020 Workshop, and the October 15th, 2020 Business Meeting. It's a pleasure of the board.
I make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to accept the minutes as previously read for those five meetings. Any questions or comments from the board? Any questions or comments from the public? Seeing and hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And that passes 5-0. Under chairman's comments, I have three things this evening. First, this is a training month for members of the Board of Supervisors. Earlier this month, members of the board attended the semi-annual meeting of the Montgomery County Association of Township Officials, also known as MCATO, and it was held virtually. I serve as the chair of MCATO's board of directors, and it was my privilege to orchestrate the meeting, which included an update from the Montgomery County Commissioners, the Health Department, and the Medical Director on the rates of COVID within the county, the vaccine availability, and the delivery. There was a discussion on best management practices used by municipalities within the county to weather the storm of COVID impacts. Included in this was our particular practice and tool regarding facility cleaning and safety that we've been using since before we reopened facilities. The third item was a discussion from both our state advocacy group, PSATs, and the state elected officials on bill movement regarding taxation services and local funding. These sessions are extremely helpful in learning from our peers, as well as the county and state presenters on current challenges, trends, and best practices to consider. With regard to all of those items from the state, all of them have been introduced as various pieces of legislation. They will have to go to committee for review, hearings as appropriate, so really nothing is defined at this point for us to share with anybody, except local funding will reduce. There is no doubt about that from all facets. Second item, this week, the board is virtually attending 3 days of the annual Pennsylvania Employer Labor Relations Advisory Service Conference, also known as PELRAS, with sessions involving current labor and employment issues facing local governments, ethical issues facing elected officials, legal issues facing elected officials, COVID impacts upon municipalities, particularly regarding finance and employment, social media issues of today, and a couple of days of case law and arbitration decisions. The final item is a good news. Upper Marion Township has again been formally recognized as a 2020 Tree City USA community for the 45th consecutive year. This is tied with the City of Philadelphia for the most in the state of Pennsylvania. Tree City USA is a program that has been greening up cities and towns across America since 1976. It's a nationwide movement that provides the framework necessary for communities to manage and expand their public trees. The program includes four core standards: establishing and maintaining sound urban forestry management, maintaining a tree board or department, having a community tree ordinance, and spending at least $2 per capita on urban forestry and celebrating Arbor Day. While developers and homeowners exercise their legal right to continue to build upon their land, this type of program helps Upper Marion continue to maintain green space and protect the environment as much as possible. So congratulations to all. And for fear of missing someone, I am going to highlight the Park and Rec team, the Public Works staff, the Shade Tree Commission, and everyone else who has and continues to play a role in this highly successful and valuable program in Upper Marion. That takes us to new business. The first item under new business is a presentation by the Board of Community Assistance. Mr. Wax, would you like to introduce this?
Thank you. Every year for the past few years, the Board of Community Assistance, prior to the application deadline, has come before the Board of Supervisors to make a presentation to let our residents know a little bit more about the Board of Community Assistance, the grants and scholarships that are available to our residents, and to organizations which provide services for Upper Marion Township residents. Here tonight, I'm here to welcome, along with my fellow supervisors, Brett Montique, who is chair of the BCA, to make this year's presentation.
Thank you, Supervisor Wax. As Greg had said, my name is Brett Montique. I am the chairperson of the Board of Community Assistance, and I'm going to give our presentation for tonight. So there are five members on the Board of Community Assistance, Lydia Dan Sardines, David Karen, and myself are your community representatives. Gina Mancino is our sole Valley Forge Casino and Resort representative currently. The former CEO stepped away from the company, and a new CEO is coming into effect on Monday, and we expect to find out if he will take the fifth spot or delegate that to another person. Excuse me. So the idea of what we do here is we share money from the Valley Forge Casino and Resort to nonprofits, sports organizations, and scholarships for Upper Marion senior students in Upper Marion Township at this point. That last one is important to note. They don't have to be an Upper Marion School District resident. It is any high school senior who resides within Upper Marion Township. These are some of the numbers of our applicants. As you can see, we've had a fairly good amount of applicants come through the program. Last year, we had a total of 78 applicants, 44 organizations, 5 sports organizations, and 29 different scholarship applications. Last year, the BCA decided to recommend 29 organizations for approval, 3 sports organizations for approval, and 24 high school seniors for scholarships. And the Board of Supervisors accepted our recommendations and made those grants and scholarships. So you can see how our monies have increased throughout the years. The first year, we gave out a total of $128,000. Last year, we gave out $177,790. That was actually done over 2 separate award seasons. We gave out our traditional spring round of awards, and then due to COVID, we decided to have a second round of awards for any organizations that might have an extra need during last year. We do have a little bit of money left over from last year, which turned out to be a very prudent thing, looking at the amount of revenue that we'll be getting this year from the Valley Forge Casino and Resort. So the application process for organizations, we are looking for a project description, the cost of the project, an organization description, and then who are the beneficiaries. So a couple of points on each of these here. One for the project description, the more specific, the better. So if someone came to us and said that they want to beautify Heuser Park, well, that's a wonderful idea, but how do we plan to beautify Heuser Park? Are we going to put a new restroom in? Are we going to put a Frisbee golf course in? Are we going to put, I don't know, giant spaceships in? All those things are important to know. We also want to know what the cost is to do that, okay? So if you have actual outlines of your costs, that increases the likelihood of your organization getting funded for a grant. We want to know who's doing it. So if the Montique family decides to beautify Heuser Park, we don't necessarily have standing to do that to Heuser Park at this point. So we want to make sure there's an organization that can back up the project, and specifically beneficiaries. If my family were to beautify Heuser Park, we'd have to come in front of the Board of Supervisors and Parks and Rec and get all the appropriate approvals and that sort of stuff. One note on that one, when we are dealing with community boards, we want to make sure that the community board that is representing or requesting the grant has approved the grant and no one's acting individually at this point. Our organizations typically are going to be 501c3s. That's just the fancy legal term for meaning it's an actual nonprofit at that point. And we have the right to give grants anywhere between $1,000 and $10,000. We do ask that all organizations provide a year-end summary by November 31st, showing what they've done with the money. We are getting much, much better at following up with organizations, making sure that these projects have actually been completed, and then requesting proof that they have been completed, and if there's any extra funds, discussing where those need to go. So for our high school seniors, we did a couple of things. Starting last year, actually right before the pandemic, we had an in-person workshop at Upper Merion High School, where I sat down with about 20 high school students and explained everything that makes a good present or a good grant application and a bad grant application. And I learned from experience there. So we blacked out the names and addresses of some really fantastic scholarship applications, and we blacked out the names and addresses and all identifying information for some less than fantastic scholarship applications. The kids found that to be very helpful. We did that again this year. Obviously, that was done over Zoom. I saw most of the kids showing their pictures, and none of them fell asleep during the presentation. So I'll take that as a victory in the Zoom world here. What we're specifically, so let me go forward here. What we're looking for in our scholarship applications are a couple things. So one, we want to see what your academics are. Not that we're giving this to the straight A student here. We've had plenty of B and C students get scholarships throughout the years, but we want to make sure that you are an active participant in your academics there. We're looking at your history of community service, both past and present. One of the things that we specify is that your project for your scholarship cannot be a complete continuation of a previous project. So people who know me well know I do a lot with the Boy Scouts. You can't use your Eagle Scout project for your BCA scholarship project as well. They have to be separate projects, okay? We're also looking for proof of what college or university you're going to go to at that point. This became actually very important last year as a lot of our students decided to change, and rightfully so. A lot of colleges are still not open in public or in person, so people were doing things on Zoom, and we had several students decide to switch colleges to go to something a little bit more affordable while doing their work on Zoom. So we need to know that because we send the checks directly to the college. Never do we send checks to the students at that point. Your community service requirements. There's a minimum of 15 hours of community service that is required. And that would be for our smallest scholarship, which is $500. The more money that we give for a scholarship, the more community service that we're looking for at that point. So our top scholarship is a $10,000 scholarship, and we're looking for a project that is estimated to be around 50 hours of community service. And specifically, to have the highest likelihood of getting a scholarship, we want that community service to be focused here in Upper Merion. We're partners with the Valley Forge Casino and Resort, and we are beneficiaries of that money because they are here in our community, and the BCA as a board feels that these service projects should come back to this community as a sound reinvestment of that money there. Projects have to be completed between June 1st and November 30th of that same year. And just like the organizations, we're asking for a detailed accounting of how that community service was done. Specifically, we're gonna ask each high school senior to have a mentor that will sign off on their project. So for example, we've had several students partner with the library in the past, and Ms. Zelli and Ms. Arnold would sign off on their projects, and we'll take that as confirmation that their projects are due. An important note and change from previous years that's not on the slide is that we've divided the scholarship awards into two separate checks. And we've done this specifically to bring higher accountability in our students in completing their projects. So the first check will be awarded for the fall semester, and then that second check will be released after November 30th for the spring semester upon completion of their project. Now, that being said, it is COVID. Things did happen this year, and we were understanding with people, giving them some leeway into those projects, but the board felt it was a good step forward to, again, bringing some additional accountability into those projects. So the things we look at specifically or require for the scholarships, any extracurricular activities, special circumstances. An example of that might be when you fill out your FAFSA, that's the financial aid form that you use for college. In some cases, if parents are split, that's not necessarily noted on the FAFSA there, right? They're looking that mom and dad are both working and they have to contribute to college. Well, as we all know, individual situations are different, and sometimes the hard numbers on the FAFSA don't tell the whole story. So if you have a special circumstance, please put that in the application. We'll take that into consideration. Community service project plan, that's probably the number one thing that we rank these scholarships on. So the more unique or impactful that your project is for Upper Marion, the higher the likelihood that we will give you a larger scholarship. We also require transcripts from the high school, although they don't actually give out transcripts anymore. They call them something different, but they're essentially transcripts. We look for letters of recommendation. We require the college acceptance letter, and we require the financial aid letter from the college as well. So our community service hours, I had mentioned it before, our minimum is 15 hours, and that would cover a grant or a scholarship award anywhere from $1,000 to $1,500. And you can see the number of hours goes up proportionally with the dollar amount that's been awarded. Historically, we've awarded one $10,000 award and one or a few $5,000 awards, and then many more $3,000 to $1,000 scholarships. Again, everything is due by that November 30th date, and it is critical that people put that into plan there. If your project doesn't involve an organization, we're asking for an unrelated person to sign off on your projects there. So I can't sign off on my son's project, and actually I can't do that because I would never give my son a scholarship with the BCA. It's conflict of interest. But the example still holds true. Parents can't be the ones signing off there. So you would need someone else. I'd be happy to do it for any of my Boy Scouts. I'm sure the Rotary or those type of people, we've had high school teachers that will sign off on it. But we do need someone that is able to sign off. Again, our scholarships go from 500 all the way up to our named scholarships. The Ronald G. Wagaman Scholarship is $5,000. Last year, I believe we handed out four of those, Greg?
Three or four.
And the General von Steuben Scholarship, which is a $10,000 scholarship. All scholarships are due on what used to be tax day, April 15th. By the way, you have an extra month to fill your taxes out right now. Helpful little note. But they are due here in the township building to Ms. Fatimo on April 15th at 5 o'clock. We do not accept late applications for the BCA scholarships or grants. All the recommendations will be made to the Board of Supervisors. Lydia D. Sardanis will make that those recommendations on May 13th. It will be broadcast on the UMGA TV. And then the Board of Supervisors will either approve or make suggestions to those recommendations there. All applicants will get a letter, both award winners and people who we choose not to award at that point as well. Our deadline, April 15th. I will throw in two additional pieces of information here. One being that to date, we have five applications in. So I could go back a couple slides and show you that last year we had 76 applications. Right now we have 5. This is actually very normal. Believe it or not, high school students like to procrastinate. So I'm sure we'll get all 30 of those scholarship applications on like the 14th or the 15th. But the organizations, again, we're hoping to get a little bit more knowledge out, or a little bit more information out there so we can get those. The other thing that I will say is, due to the pandemic, we are looking at a smaller benefit pool currently. We are in talks with Valley Forge Casino and Resort to try to remedy that smaller benefit pool. I can't get too much into that because nothing is official or public, but I would recommend people put in their applications as soon as possible to have a better likelihood of success. Are there any questions I can answer to the Board of Supervisors? Public? No one's asleep. I will take it as a win.
So if I just may make one comment, first of all, thank you for the outstanding presentation. You did a great job, as you always do. And really, my comment is more directed to Township Manager Hamaday, and that is, can we get this portion of the meeting set up as a segment to go on the Township website as soon as possible? We've done that in previous years, but I think that as comprehensive as this presentation is, any organization which might be unfamiliar with the process, or any, obviously, student, it will be their first go around, might want to check this out.
I will make sure that happens, but I guess I could say now that with the TV staff and Don here, that it's probably already underway and it could be ready as early as tomorrow.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Supervisor Wax, I am told from Mr. Herbert that it will be ready tomorrow.
Very good. Okay, that takes us to item B under new business, which is a conditional use hearing, a continued hearing on Mansell Mill Road Corporation, 850 Mansell Mill Road, and their application pursuant to Section 165-135 use regulations of the Township Code to permit a residential-oriented development to be located on the SM1-zoned property. And I'll turn it over to Mr. McGrory.
At this time, I'll open the hearing, introduce into the record an email dated March 5th from the applicant's attorney requesting that this hearing be continued until next month, which is the April 15th meeting at 7:30. I believe it's 7:30 or 7.
7:30. The meeting will actually start at 7.
And so it'll be continued till April 15th at 7 in this room. They're working out continuing dialogue with traffic improvements associated with the project, and they are progressing, so it's been productive. With that, does the board have a motion to approve the requested continuance?
I make a motion to approve the requested continuance.
I'll second that.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Phillips, seconded by Mrs. Kenny, to accept the request to move this to April the 15th at 7 p.m. Any questions or comments from the board? Questions or comments from the public? Seeing and hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
At this time, we'll close the hearing and you can reconvene into the public meeting portion of your agenda. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. McGrory. That takes us to item C, which is the consent agenda, and it is a rather long one, so bear with me. Might need one or two drinks of water on this one. The first item, resolution 2021-11. Recognizing the month of April as Pennsylvania Safe Digging Month. Any details on this, Mr. Hamaday?
Word out to the public, if you are breaking ground, even with a shovel, that you need to call the Pennsylvania One Call.
That's why I asked, to make sure the people know.
Yes.
Okay, item number two, resolution 2021-12, support for the enactment of local control of minimum wage laws. Actually, this is a non-binding resolution expressing support for increasing the minimum wage consistent with the state and federal efforts to raise minimum wages to a living wage. Item three, resolution 2021-13, Act 537 plan revision for Kraft Custom Homes, 153 Hughes Road, and this is to authorize the submission of sewage facilities planning modules to the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection for the installation of an individual on-lot sewage system at 153 Hughes Road. This is a single dwelling, single-family dwelling on a single lot. Item number four, a financial security escrow release number two for Kraft Custom Homes, LLC, 383 Anderson Road Subdivision. This is to approve the escrow release for the completion of the required public improvements to date as part of their subdivision plan. It's in the amount of $26,497, and this has been reviewed and approved by the township engineer. Item number five, financial escrow security release number two for 900 River Road, LLC. And this is in the amount of $34,992.15 for the completion of the required site improvements to date as part of the warehouse development project as recommended by the township engineer. Item number six, subdivision land development plan review letter of extension from Windsor LLC for 450 West Bidler Road. And this is to accept their letter of extension dated March 4th, 2021. Next item, number seven, is to authorize the township manager to sign real estate tax settlement stipulations. First one is for Brandywine Operating Partnerships, LP, 600 Park Avenue, for the tax years 2019 and 2020, resulting in an overpayment of real estate taxes in the amount of $3,682.35. Second one is regarding D&P Associates by Walgreen Eastern Company, Inc., 119 East DeKalb Pike for the tax year 2020, resulting in an overpayment of real estate taxes in the amount of $471.93. And the third is Povin Real Estate, Inc., 645 West DeKalb Pike for the tax years 2017 through 2020, resulting in an underpayment of real estate taxes in the amount of $13,235.18. The net of this is an increase of revenue to the township exceeding $9,000. Number eight is 2021 collective bargaining agreement with the International Association of Firefighters Local 5233. Item number nine, homestead exemption request on 2736 Valley Forge Circle. Approval of the homestead exemption request for the property owner at that location for the 2021 township real estate tax in the amount of $202.27. Another homestead exemption request is number 10, 575 South Goddard Boulevard, condo 310. And this is for the 2021 township real estate tax in the amount of $202.27. Number 11 is in regard to the Crow Creek Trail project contract payment number four in the amount of $67,455 to Kenny Excavating for work done to date on the Crow Creek Trail project. And Mr. Hamaday, this is grant funded, correct?
Correct, yes. And if I just could, just to let everybody know, we're about, even though the trail is moving at a race car pace, we've only paid to date about 34% of the project. We have $1.2 million left. So there are plenty of funds remaining.
Okay. Next, we have a series of payments in regard to the construction of the EMS and fire station on Guthrie Road. The first is contract payment number seven for $41,063.75 to the Fayette Group for work done to date. The second one is plumbing contract payment number five in the amount of $12,028.76 to F.W. Howder for work. Next one is mechanical contract payment number seven for $8,235 to Aduct Mechanical. The next one is electrical contract payment number seven for $11,203.84 to White Marsh Electric. The next one is construction management contract payment number five in the amount of $3,575 to A&E Construction. And the last one is construction management contract payment number eight in the amount of $8,485 to A&E Construction. Number 18 is in regard to the Moore Irwin House structural assessment contract for Murray Associates, and this is to consider a contract with them for the structural inspection and assessment of the Moore Irwin House in the amount of $5,000 75% of this, $3,800, is grant funded. So the net of this is $1,200 would come from Park and Rec funds, correct, Mr. Hamaday?
Or general fund, yes. We have it covered with the additional funds.
For those unfamiliar with the Moore Irwin House, it has for decades been in declining condition, and it's time to take a look at that and determine what actually needs to be done and then what the costs associated with that might be. And a couple of our advisory boards have recommended that this be undertaken as well, and actually they are the ones who applied and received the grant. Item number 19, permission to advertise for the Schuylkill River West Trail Reach number 2, bid authorization to advertise for construction of Reach 2 from the terminus of the existing trail to its connection to the trail under US 422. Mr. Hamaday, any comments on that?
Yes, I do. I apologize. We did get a comment in from the public. But with regard to permission to advertise, I'm asking the board to allow us to advertise the what we'll call the Schuylkill River Trail Reach 2 piece, which is the piece that hasn't been completed. It's about 470 feet from the end of the existing trail to the end of our easement or property at the 422 Expressway. It originally, we had an agreement with PennDOT for the contractor working on the 422 project to complete that section of the trail. We would then reimburse PennDOT for that work, which includes not only the trail but a retaining wall. With the pandemic, the delays in the 422 project with the shutdown, as well as the Peregrine Falcons holding back the project, PennDOT is now in a dispute with the contractor over extended damages. The contractor wants to get out and be done with the project. They've now declined to do the work. Rather than be a part of any litigation, I think it's prudent in requesting the board just allow us to bid the project ourselves.
Okay, thank you.
And it is fully funded, so money is there for the completion. We're still hoping for that time frame of June and July. Yeah, and
okay.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Thank you. And that public comment, we'll catch that at the end of this.
Yeah.
Item number 20. We have received three proposed ordinances. This is to request permission to advertise so that they can be discussed at a public hearing at the April 15th business meeting. First is a proposed ordinance amending Chapter 165, zoning, to Section 208 regarding fences to establish height regulations within the front yard and restrict hazardous fencing types. Second item is in regard to the zoning Section 165-199, non-conforming uses, to provide regulations for existing non-conforming lots that do not meet area, width, and yard dimensions. The issue here is in regard to certain sections of the township and what are known as movie lots, and this is to help the facilitation where owners want to consolidate those lots. Correct, Mr. Phillips?
Yes, the movie lots are an older form of legal lot, but they do not meet our current zoning criteria. And so the goal here is rather than having folks go out and sell these underutilized and non-conforming lots to build a large house on, they now will have to try to merge these lots together with other lots, if they own other lots, in order to be able to build what they want to build on. So this will actually help the density in some of our more denser areas of the township.
Thank you. And the third item is a proposed ordinance regulating the use and possession of marijuana and marijuana paraphernalia to enable the police to use their discretion to charge a person found with a small amount of marijuana intended for personal use with a summary offense as opposed to a misdemeanor. I would just comment that this is not decriminalizing marijuana use. All of these are posted on the township website and have been for the past week under public notices. And if you scroll to the bottom of public notices, they are all there. Item number 21 is to accept the resignation of Sarah Seipel from the Historical Commission. And number 22 is to appoint, this is added, to appoint Corin Draper to the ECDC, Economic and Community Development Committee. pleasure of the board on the consent agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda, and then, Mr. Chairman, I have two comments.
Okay.
And I will second.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Phillips, seconded by Mr. Wax, to approve the consent agenda. And Mr. Phillips, proceed.
With regard to the resignation of Sarah Seipel, I just want to thank her for all of her hard work and for her dedication to the Historical Commission. The commission could not have gotten off the ground without her. And Ms. Seipel was actually one of our initial candidates for what is being touted as Voices of Upper Marion. She did a couple test runs with Don Herbert and I believe Angela Harris to begin the process of trying to figure out how we're going to record oral histories of some of our folks. So I really want to thank her for her service and foresight. It's going to be a loss for us not having her on the board. But having said that, with the acceptance of her resignation tonight, we will now have another opening on the Historical Commission that we'd love to have folks who are interested in this thing and interested in the history of Upper Marion kind of put their applications in. And then going along with the history part of this, for most of the older residents of the township, the Moore Irwin House is also known as the General Muhlenberg House or the General Muhlenberg Building. And it was the cultural center for Upper Marion for many, many years, where you were able to take dance classes and art lessons and all kinds of stuff. So it would be great to see if we can't get that thing back in shape. But clearly, we're going to take a look at it and see what we need to do with that building. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
Thank you. Any other comments from the board members? Mr. Garzillo.
I'll add a little bit extra to what Mr. Phillips was saying about the Moore Irwin home, that we're also working on getting an arboretum in that area. So we're at the stage that we had to have a certain amount of trees of different species. We've qualified for that. They had to tag the trees. So our Shade Tree Commission is spearheading that initiative, and so we'll be able to have an arboretum over at that property as well. So I just wanted to add that to what he was commenting about with that property.
Thank you. Mrs. Kenny?
Oops. Yes, thank you. I have two comments, one about the Moore Irwin House as well. I just want to mention that for the past 10 years that I've been aware, we've had an MOU by one group, and we've had all kinds of people coming to us saying that they have ideas or suggestions for how to repurpose the Moore Irwin House. And we would love to have an actual business plan that we would be able to support that would give the impetus to save this house. At the current time, we have never seen a business plan from anyone. It's great to have all kinds of pie in the sky ideas and suggestions, but that doesn't do the hundreds of thousand dollars of restoration that it needs and the renovations that would be needed to make it into some kind of a feasible building that can be used for the residents and or for the public. So if there's anyone out there, I'll just put this out. If you have any serious idea, workable plan, we would love to hear that, because that has been part of the holdup. The five-year MOU that we had never resulted in an actual business plan, and it's just frustrating to think that it's just sitting there idle. The second comment on, I'd like to make a comment on the consent agenda, the item number two, the resolution 2021-12. As Supervisor Genoway said, that this is, it's actually a symbolic resolution. A little bit more explanation. There's a thing called preemption. The state of Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, preempts local government from making certain laws. Some of these are laws about guns, laws about minimum wage, and about broadband, and I believe there's others as well. So Representative Kevin Burke has presented a bill, it's House Bill number 923, on March 15th, which would basically do away with preemption in terms of being allowed to make local laws about minimum wage. This does not mean that anyone is going to change any minimum wage laws for anyone's township. It's just a resolution that's trying to overturn the 2006 provision that made it illegal for local municipalities to make laws regarding minimum wage. And I think the importance of this is that we all know that the cost of living differs from state to state and from county to county and city to city. It costs a different amount of money to live comfortably in Philadelphia versus King of Prussia or Johnstown or Wilkes-Barre or Pittsburgh. And what we're supporting is just the idea of this resolution the bill that's been put into the House, it's been introduced, that would just allow them to give municipalities more local control in terms of minimum wage. The other thing I would just add is that about 2 years ago, this board did raise the minimum wage to $10 for township employees. And that doesn't take, and that's only for township employees, so that's not in opposition to the preemption clause of the state. So I just wanted to mention that, and that's my explanation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else from board members? Mr. Hamaday, that question you got from the public.
Thank you, Mr. Genoway. We received a service request question at 8.03 p.m. through the website or the MyMT app from Mr. Bob Small, 213 Cambridge Road. He comments, I see on the plan for the new trail that is going through Walker Field, the old metal green bridge is slated to stay. Is there a way to add a new wider bridge at that location? It would then connect to the wider trail being installed. And I can forward that to the trail consultant to see if that's a possibility and maybe get a potential cost. If there are some savings at the end of the project, we might be able to do that. The question really will be, is that something that we'd have to order or could it be hand constructed? And I can provide that information back to the board.
And whether or not it would have to be engineered in any way.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for your question, Mr. Small. Any other public comment?
I had a comment to add to that.
Go ahead.
And Mr. Hamaday, there is a small bridge that will be constructed on site right there across where the stormwater management, I don't know to call it, a ravine that leads into Crow Creek. So they will be constructing a bridge on site. So possibly maybe that can tie in with that metal bridge that is not that large of a span. So I don't know if it would have to be engineered, but if they already have to build a small bridge at that one other area, perhaps they can incorporate that together.
You're absolutely right, and we'll have them look at that. Since it's an on-site build, that timber bridge, it may not be that much other than, you know, time, material, cost. If they could build something similar in the same location or where the green metal bridge is. Yeah.
So, I've been actively involved with the construction with this trail, and I have to say that bridge has been mentioned to me quite a few times. So if we can do something there, I think that would benefit that area and also make it more ADA compliant as well. That I can't imagine a wheelchair or someone with a walker or things like that being able to go across that because of the open slots that are on that bridge. So I would support that.
Thank you. Public comment. Ma'am, please. No, you need to come up to the podium and state your name and your residence, please. Okay, this is just on the consent agenda.
Hello, Mike Napolitan, 360 Garrison Way. Just a couple questions. where's the budget for the fire station on Guthrie Road? Where do I find that budget line item?
You can talk to Chief Nolan.
It's not in the township budget document?
Mr. Hamaday?
The budget for the fire station, 56 HQ, is through funding that we have through the proceeds from the Lafayette Ambulance, as well as some general fund monies. So the it is in the budget, it is earmarked. I can provide you that information. Offhand, I don't know the total cost of the whole project when I add up all the contracts. But it's not a separate line item broken out. You'll see, I'll provide you that information.
Is that normal practice for the township for a capital improvement project not to have a budget?
The budget was created. The budget was part of the bid package for the project. Mr. Paul, I just don't know the line number in the capital budget for you to say, hey, here it is. I'd have to look.
So it is in the capital budget, that's published?
It is, but it won't be broken down by trades. It'll be a lump number. You'll see that. Because keep in mind now that this project is going to extend over two budget cycles. It started in 19, it'll go through 20, and then into 2021.
So do you have what's the total budget?
I don't have that number in front of me. When we add up all the trades, it's probably somewhere close to 1.2 to 1.4. I just don't know the exact number to give you right now.
Yeah. Thank you. The other questions I had on this general, the Moore House, wasn't there a study done previously on the Moore House that was funded? They went in, did an environmental study on, I believe it was on asbestos and mold, and another, I think there was another part that was a structural. Was there not one already done?
Mr. Phillips, do you remember?
Yeah, so there was a study that we did for asbestos abatement and environmental hazards. This study is a little bit different. That study is probably about 5 years old now, and with the with the creation of the Historical Commission, this project has now gotten new legs. So they were able to get a grant from the BCA, I believe, and they are engaged now through the township with an architectural study to figure out what we can do to shore up that building.
Is the blue tarp, has there anything been done to stabilize the roof so that further degradation of the building? Because it seems like, you know, we had a study 5 years ago, and I think before there might have been a study before that at some point.
There have been.
Now we're 5 years later doing another study.
Mr. Napolitan, there have been a number of studies and or looks at that from previous boards, even prior to our being on the board. And we're just now getting to the point where we're going to do something with it. Unfortunately, previous boards it was not a resource. It's why they abandoned the cultural center use of it, and it's just laid fallow for almost 20 years now. So. More than that, yeah.
I mean, it just seems like, just the mention of a business plan, trying to move forward, it seems like we can find money where we want to find money in the township for certain things.
Well, we're not.
And an important historical property such as this, I mean, it seems like that would be something of a priority. And I believe there would be a lot of support in the community for that. I support that. Preserving that building, preserving that history. Without a business plan.
You open up your checkbook?
I open up my checkbook every year to the township.
Not to the township. This would be, we're talking about probably $1 million to renovate this thing.
But we just put $1 million roof on the community center. There's money is
and oranges. You're talking about historical.
We're putting $1.3 million into the Crow Creek Trail.
Right.
We're putting $1.3 million into a new firehouse. There's money out there. We're getting grants. We're getting funding. People are able to get that. Mm-hmm. At some point, I think we should be able to get that for Upper Marion and get this historical property stabilized, preserved, and then try to figure out maybe do something with it later. I don't think at least get a roof on it, something. I mean, hopefully the structural study gets things motivated and we get it moving.
Okay. It does have a roof on it, and we have put tarp over it in order to try to protect it further. But the question is, how much money do we want to put into a structure that has no apparent use, no clear use? And that's where I think we lost, looking back, I mean, hindsight's 20/20. When I came on the board, we had that MOU in place, and it expired about the third year, I believe, that I was on the board. And over those 5 years, in my view, we lost 5 years from the group that was going to come up with a plan to repurpose it, and we were working with them. But the very last meeting, they still had no business plan and nothing to show for it, and we lost 5 years. And I'm not pointing fingers, I'm just saying that's the history, that part of it. And I think I could speak for all of us here. My daughter used to take art lessons there when she was little. She's now 45, so that tells you, you know, how long ago that it was. It was 35, 40 years ago that it was an ongoing building. Park and Rec had their headquarters there, I believe, as well. But we can't just pour money into something that's going to sit empty. I want to see a purpose. We've had other people, we've all had people come to us saying, you know, I got a great idea, we should do this, we should have a bed and breakfast, we should have a hotel, we should have a theater, we should have an art place, we should have, you know, various things. And we would definitely support some kind of use, a museum, but the question is then, is it going to be something that would be self-supporting? We are absolutely trying to find a way to preserve it, and that's why we're doing this. The last, about 8 or 10 years ago, I think we got an estimate of $600,000 just to remediate the mold and the mildew. Now that was, like I said, about 8 or 10 years ago. That's just remediation, and we, several of us, myself included, and Mr. Hamaday, we had a tour of the building several months ago. It was cold. I don't remember. Was it October? And we went inside to see what it looked like. And it's really in deplorable condition. And it's, you know, it's just happened over three decades. So I'm not picking on you, but if you or anyone here, that's why I said what I did. If somebody can come forward with an actual working plan that could restore this help us restore this building, we want to do this. We would love to have some kind of a public-private partnership. We are definitely not against that idea. If you look at the Kennedy Suplee House, for instance, it's now owned by Valley Forge National Park. That previously was privately owned. My daughter's college luncheon we had when she graduated locally, we had it in the Kennedy Suplee House, and that was probably 20 years ago, 25 years ago. That is now totally in disrepair. Someone has to come along with enough of an idea that's practical, and I tell you, I would absolutely stand behind it. Right now, we're just trying to not let it fall apart completely. So if you have any ideas or know of anyone who does, please come forward and work with us on this.
I understand you want to have a plan for it. I think right now, though, the township should be committed to preserving a historical structure,
property,
and make that the focus, not worry about what it's going to be in the next 3 years. But sometimes you said it's just a building that you're going to repair it and doesn't have anything in it. Well, it has the history of this township. It has the history of the Revolutionary War,
which nobody can go into because it's too dangerous.
Right, but if the township fixed it, they would be able to.
I actually was told an estimate of about $2 million. I believe that was the number that our public works had mentioned, that it might be as much as $2 million to renovate it, not to just remediate, but to sure. renovate it. And that's just a top of the head estimate. And to my mind, yes, we've spent $1 million on a trail, but a trail is usable by hundreds or thousands of people. I could not justify putting $1 or $2 million into a building that just sits there and has no purpose. It needs a purpose. It needs, you know.
I mean, it could be a public meeting space. It could have many purposes for the community.
Sure, but it could, who's going to do that? Who's going to do that?
The township. I mean, that's just my point, is there's money for a lot of other projects, a lot of other things mm-hmm. that a lot of people in the township don't use or are not as concerned about. But I think the history of Upper Marion, the United States, the Revolution, it's very important.
Absolutely.
And, you know, could be a site for education of our children for the revolutionary period of our country and the founding of this nation and our Constitution. We could have that in Upper Marion. It could be part of the school system. There's a lot of things that we could do. We could have maybe a university would come in. I mean, Penn, you know, if the Arboretum gets going, maybe you can approach a university to help take it over, or an outside nonprofit that would run it and take care of it. Maybe divest it from the township into the hands of somebody with a preservation, another organization. I mean, I think the players at one time wanted to have something in there.
They were the people who had the MOU and did nothing.
Right. So, I mean,
I wasn't going to bring up the name or point fingers, but they were the group.
But they need the support of a board that's going to say, we're going to get this building back to life.
And we would do that if we had some kind of, you know, you're mentioning a lot of great ideas, but none of those organizations have come forward to us. The only one that did was the players, but ultimately it was a bust.
Right, but you're the leaders, you have the money, you have the access.
Well,
to the
first of all,
let's
just stop that. We don't have the money. That therein lies part of the problem. Mm-hmm. I know that you made a couple statements about just how you know we got a trail, we'll do this, we've got $1 million roof. All those were grants.
Right.
There are not a lot of grants for brick and mortar historic buildings. Those recs, those credits, they're gone, and they've been gone since the 80s. That was like the big thing. All developers downtown, you know, Old City, they were using SRECs up like they couldn't. They were going out of style because they were getting more money to preserve those buildings than they were to tear them down. Now those things have been gone for 20, 30 years, and they're not coming back because the state budget is just as strapped as our budget.
I mean, you also have the referendum process. I mean, if you wanted to advocate for
that. Referendum process requires us to go out and borrow money.
That's right. Yes.
So,
but I think, Mr. Phillips, that there's one key point that has not been addressed yet that we have to all understand. These are all great ideas. I wish we could build it tomorrow, but we can't do anything until we complete the feasibility assessment to determine three things: the structural stability, the construction viability, and the environmental and hazardous materials impact on that site. Once we know those three, we'll be able to get a cost, and that's part of this project. No one in any of the prior projects has looked at what is the true cost to remediate, stabilize, and then what could be constructed. And then we can let our imagination run wild. And to your point, what we learned 2 weeks ago from the state is there will be no state money for any type of project like this. So if we're going to do something like this, we're going to have to look at private investors. We're going to have to look at some type of a Pew grant, for lack of a better term, or we're going to have to do some type of borrowing activity too, whether it's through referendum or you know, whenever one of our current projects comes to completion. So we can't do anything until we get this done, until we get the data back from that, so that we can make a decision that's based upon fact and not based upon just simple, yeah, this would be a great thing to do.
I appreciate that, and just not let it go 5 years after this study. And I mean, I'm sure the community would support it.
I have an extra comment to make also, Chair Genoway, with what you said. And that was the purpose of us increasing the funds that we're putting into possible remediation that we can do with the building. So we had the grant money for $3,800, and we took it up to $5,000 because of exactly what Chair Genoway was saying, that we wanted to get a structural assessment as well, and we don't even know what the viability of this building is at this point. When we had gone through it, there was running water in the basement from the outdoors. There were animals that were living everywhere. We don't even know if that building has structural integrity. And for us to put people into a facility that's unsafe isn't sound judgment. So I believe that we are taking the proper steps. We did put the tarp over the roof, and we're doing what's necessary. And this is the next step. And then once we get the structural assessment, we can know what our next step will be. We have no idea at this point. So thank you, Chair Genoway, for mentioning that aspect of this, because that's what's significant. It all goes down to that. We don't even know.
And if it's $4 million and we have other capital projects or open space that we're potentially feasibly can obtain, then maybe we could put together either a referendum or we can go out and get and borrow some additional funds. But we need this first.
Yes.
My last question is on 20C, the proposed marijuana and paraphernalia and marijuana ordinance. What's the driving factor behind that in the township?
There are a number of municipalities within our region that are moving this forward. I can also tell you that it is an impetus from the legal, the law enforcement, and the sociological communities.
What is that? Could you elaborate on the specifics?
I will elaborate on it whenever we do the discussion on it, but at this point that was proposed, it was requested that we propose looking at this, and that's what we'll do.
And are there statistics that involve in this?
We'll discuss those when it comes up.
This is a hearing. You're proposing to have a hearing.
Proposing to have a hearing to discuss this.
Right. And I just think maybe some discussion early by the community, get the community involved before the hearing so that people understand what's going on, why this is being brought up. What's so important in Upper Marion other than other communities having this? That just doesn't seem enough to me. It seems as I've said, it's a solution in search of a problem. Is there a lot of issues with this in Upper Marion with personal possession being prosecuted?
I don't have all of the data that's being developed. Some of the data to support this is being developed right now. But there is activity in this area in Upper Marion Township.
There certainly is, but it just seems like to have this proposed and brought forward, all that work would have been done ahead of this and having a public hearing and writing an ordinance.
I don't have the data that the police department has that will be presented at the hearing to discuss this. And that's the process.
The other thing regarding this, when I read through the ordinance, it's on the website, there's no discussion of certain zones like a school or a park. So this is a dangerous precedent, I believe, and just because other communities are doing it, I think publicizing it and then having newspaper articles and then having politicians tout it as being some grand plan and some big issue, it opens us up and says Upper Marion's open for business and you'll have more of it. I believe that's a problem. And I just don't think it's appropriate for this community to do this. I think that the police have the discretion already. The district attorney has the discretion. And from what I've talked with Chief Nolan, he said that there is discretion available. This is just a different tool. I just don't see why we need it, and I just think it broadcasts the wrong image and the wrong priorities for this community. Thank you.
Anything else? Yes, sir.
Hi, Keith Klein, 1089 Wakegate Road. I'd just like to follow up on 20C, because publicizing this and broadcasting it, As you yourself said, it's not legalizing marijuana in Upper Marion, but what I'm afraid it does is send a message that you can come here with your illegal marijuana and not be prosecuted. And by definition, everybody that has in possession of illegal marijuana has purchased that from a drug dealer who is breaking even more laws. So advertising something like this, I think, ultimately attracts more drug dealers to Upper Marion, which I'm pretty sure the residents of Upper Marion are overwhelmingly opposed to.
Thank you for your comment. There is still prosecution. It's at a different level. You're receiving a summary offense, and I'm not an expert in that process, but it is my understanding from all other communities that have enacted this that this does not decriminalize it. It gives the police officers the opportunity to use discretion on what level of crime it actually is. So they will still pay a fine. They could be charged with the full extent of the law. But I am not the expert on that. So, and I'm not saying I'm pro or for this at this point. I'm just trying to bring some clarity to the discussion. And that's why we're going to talk about this in detail at that meeting. And I know Chief Nolan will be prepared to discuss this. And I know he's working with the district attorney's office on it. And I know that he's working with other municipalities that have adopted something like this to determine positive, negative, potential pitfalls so that we can discuss it.
When is that meeting? I didn't.
April 15th.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Anything else on the consent agenda? The consent agenda, just what I read about. I'll call on you whenever we're in additional business. I will do this when it's time. Okay, all in favor of adopting the consent agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. That takes us to accounts payable and payrolls. Motion to pay the bills?
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Wax?
Second.
Seconded by Mrs. Garzillo to pay the accounts payable and payroll. Any questions from the board? Questions from the public? Questions from the public that's here? Seeing and hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We'll pay the bills and payroll. Additional business. You can make your way up and then I'll point to you whenever you get up here. But we're gonna go first. I have two items. Unless someone else is going to read open the vacancies.
I can if you want. Sure.
Okay, I have one item. We understand the frustration that exists in the general public about the vaccine. This is completely out of the hands of Upper Marion Township and any of us or anyone within this organizational structure. However, I want to assure the residents that we continue to pester the county and state contacts that we have to provide more vaccine to Montgomery County and to the township. We have enabled at the township level both testing and vaccination sites so that as testing is needed and as vaccination becomes available, we have the facilities here to be able to administer this. We suggest that you access the appropriate website or phone contact for further information. We have posted relative information on the township website, our newsletter, UMGA-TV, and our social media outlets. I want to commend the extra effort of Mrs. Kenny, who has been like a dog with a bone on this issue, particularly with regard to seniors and getting access to vaccine sites and being able to register for the vaccine. And for Mr. Wax in working the system for better information than releasing that information to the public as quickly as we can gain it. And in my role as the president of the county's elected official association, I'm on biweekly updates with other senior elected officials of southeastern Pennsylvania, where we are getting updates on the status of COVID infections and on the status of vaccines. We have been on two elected leadership calls this past month regarding COVID trends, plans, and updates. Regarding COVID-19, at our most recent meeting that was conducted with Commissioner Arkush, the county's medical director, and the county's public safety director, they have provided 5 points that we all should continue to practice. Wear a mask, maintain social distancing, wash your hands regularly, avoid crowds, even small groups, as much as possible, and when you are eligible, consider getting the vaccine. Other comments from other members of the board on this or anything else? Mrs. Kenny, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. And we do have the information about the phone number. That was the thing that I was pestering the county commissioners for, because they only had vaccination appointments able to be made online. And I pointed out that there were many people, either older people or people who couldn't afford computers or people who were computer phobes, whatever, who wanted and needed a phone number. So that phone number is available. I don't have it with me right now. I read it out last time. We do have it on our website. We do have it on our TV station. It's on the digital sign outside. It is a phone number that anybody can call who's in the proper group at this point, still 1A. You can now make your vaccination appointment by calling this phone number. Prior to this, you had to have a computer, and it took a long time, but we finally do have that. So, yeah, that was my big concern once I realized that there were a lot of people who had no other access. So that said, the citizen board vacancies as of today, the community center advisory board, 1 vacancy, farmers market board, 1 vacancy, human relations commission, 2 vacancies, they are both alternates, park and rec board, 1 vacancy, park and rec board student position. So if there are any students there out there, juniors or seniors in high school, or if you live in the township and are going to college, that would count as well, 1 vacancy. Property maintenance board, 1 vacancy, an alternate. UCC Board of Appeals, 2 vacancies, alternates. And the Upper Merion Foundation Subcommittee, 1 vacancy. And the Upper Merion Historical Commission now has 2 vacancies with the resignation of Ms. Seipel. And I would just mention one more time, anytime we bring up boards and authorities, just to remind the public that these meetings are always open to all residents. You don't need an invitation. You don't need to be a board member. Just come to the meeting if they are in person, or get the appropriate link that's online for each of those meetings. They're WebEx or soon to be Zoom. Which is something to look forward to. So that's my only other thing, is that feel free to attend any of our meetings, find out what's going on, and ask questions, make suggestions, and see if also, if it's a trial run, if you'd like to volunteer for one of the boards or commissions or authorities. Thank you. Sarah.
Ms. Grazilla.
I have a couple community-centered announcements to make. I was going to comment on the Tree City USA Award that we were privileged to receive again for the 45th year. So I won't go into all those details again. But I just did want to acknowledge some of the parties behind why we've been able to successfully get this award for 45 consecutive years. We're very privileged, and this will be also coming from our citizen boards, we're very privileged for our Shade Tree Commission to have three expert members that are two are arborists and one is a landscape architect. They have just been phenomenal with so many things in our township related to trees and our tree canopy and working with the trail, that they've just been very beneficial and helpful with many processes related to trees. And I also want to acknowledge the Parks and Rec Department for their input on us getting this distinguished award again. The other thing I wanted to mention, also related to trees, is biannually we have a tree tending event in the township. This next one that we'll be having will be on Saturday, April 17th. You'll need to go to the web township website to sign up for that. There's a waiver that needs to be filled out that you need to bring if you want to participate. The website will tell you what you need to bring, what you need to wear, and how to register. So if you go to the township website, if you click on, there are three little bars to the left, you click on that, then you click on environment, and then you click on park partners. So you have to go through a few levels to get to that point. So you go to the three bars, environment, park partners, and that'll give you all the information. If there are any questions that you do have about this event, questions are being answered by Jerry Vitimo, and her email address is gvitimo, V-A-T-T-I-M-O, so it's gvitimo@umtownship.org, and she can answer your questions about this program. The last one we did was in November, and now this one is in April, and they try to do them at least twice a year. You can also become a park partner. There's also programs that you can do to become an actual tree tender, and they can give you more information about those kind of programs when you're on site there. So that Shade Tree Commission will be there. Two other things I want to mention is we're starting our countdown to our regular season opening for the farmers market. So we're down to 8 weeks away, and we'll start advertising that in our e-newsletter. And help us come celebrate the opening of the, this will be our actually 12th season of the farmers market. May 15th is that opening date, and Parks and Rec Department are putting together a very fun event day for that opening day for us. So I hope everyone will try to join us at the Township Building Park for the opening day of farmers market on May 15th. And the last thing I want to mention, I was going to mention this earlier when the consent agenda, but I thought I'd separate it. I wanted everyone to know about work that was done with the Schuylkill River Trail, that in this nation, our Schuylkill River Trail has been nominated in the top 10. I heard that we're in third place, but I didn't verify that, but we're at least in the top 10. So when we finally get our connection on our Schuylkill River West Trail, we'll be part of that top 10 in the nation of nature trails in the country, which I just think is phenomenal. So that's an exciting venture for us to complete and then be a part of that. So being top 10 in the nation is a pretty big deal. And that was my last item.
Thank you, Mr. Rajola. Mr. Phillips, did you have something?
Yeah, I only have two items. The first one is a happy belated St. Patrick's Day to everybody. It is always a bad thing when St. Patrick's Day is in the middle of the week. Just going to say. I've had the number of hearings that were scheduled on St. Patrick's Day boggled my mind because none of them were Irish. That's all I got to say about that. But one of the things that I've been noticing with regard to the news lately, and I'm sure all of you have seen this as well, is the violence and the hatred against our Asian population nationwide. The murders that took place just recently, just unacceptable. Today, Dr. Tolino, on behalf of the school district, put out an email basically showing solidarity with our Asian community. And I think I speak on behalf of all of the board members here that we stand with the school district as well as our Asian community to push back against this discrimination, hatred, and violence. It's just unacceptable. There's no reason for it. These are hardworking individuals that are part of our community. You can't weed them out. They are integral to what we do. And it is just unacceptable for that type of behavior to happen. Not to mention the sadness and the mourning that for those who have lost their loved ones. Just unacceptable. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Mr. Wax.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Three very brief things. First, Supervisor Garzillo, you were correct. We were number three. We did finish number three. It is a great trail for those of you who have not used it. To piggyback a little bit along what Supervisor Kenny said in regards to citizen boards. Just as a note, some citizen boards do have pre-qualifications. And I also just want to take a moment to wish our communities that celebrate Holi or Easter or Passover a very happy holiday season. We will not be back on before those holidays.
Thank you, Mr. Wax.
We mentioned earlier the number, if you need a phone number to call for COVID vaccine appointments. So I'm going to read this off now. If you don't have a pencil handy at home and you want to jot it down, I'm going to read it again after our speaker speaks, and then I will read it one more time. That phone number is 833-875-3967. 833-875-3967.
Hi, my name is Robin Wesley. I live at 914.
You can, if you wish, while you're speaking.
I'm used to working in one of these, but it's a little bit thicker. My name's Robin Wesley. I live at 914 Croton Road, Wayne, PA. And I wanted to bring to light the hardship that the plan that the township has approved has caused. The plan to cut a shared driveway in half. The driveway has been shared since 1952. And this family has shared it since 1968. The plan allows for no access for this family to utilize their garage with their vehicles. No turnaround space. We would have to back out onto busy Croton Road. It will decrease my property value. I have a garage. This is what I would say to the potential buyer if I was going to sell. I have a garage, but you can't utilize it for your car. You might be able to utilize it to store stuff, walk into, but not your car. The plan submitted by Davis Development was approved by the township engineer, Brian Zakel, Mark Zadroga, and the township solicitor. The township states that there's nothing that I can do, and that the township solicitor and Davis's lawyer, according to Mark and Brian, state the same thing. The plan was never brought to the attention of this homeowner until it was approved, even though the plan clearly shows that there is a hardship to the property owner. It has caused many sleepless nights, undue stress, and lack of appetite. In my profession, we call that depression. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Genway. And Mrs. Wesley, the township is aware of the issue. We are looking into it. Mrs. Wesley is correct. The township did issue permits for the construction of a new house. There are a lot of different factors here. I know we have been talking with the developer to see if there's anything that can be done. Some of the issue, and we can talk a little further. I can give you a call. I think I do have your number to provide some additional information. But some of this it will be a personal property dispute that will be have very limited ability to get involved. Yes, we did issue a permit for a new dwelling, but there's going to be some things that we can't force the builder to do. But I can give you some information. You know,
my car's 17 feet.
Yeah.
You won't allow me 18 feet to back out of the garage.
Yeah. Well, again, I want to say it's not
we
us.
We can just leave it at that.
But,
I just wanted to come here and do a statement just so that you all are aware, and I thank you for your time and patience.
Thank you. We'll follow up through the township staff, and someone will get back to you, Mr. Wesley. Okay. The number again, if you're interested in a COVID vaccine appointment, 833-875-3967. 833-875-3967. Anything else? Mr. Napolitano.
Mike Napolitan, 360 Garrison Way. Just two questions. The first was at the beginning of the meeting, we had minutes approved that I think went through November maybe. Why is there such a backlog on the minutes?
Mr. Hamaday.
Thank you, Mr. Genoway. I will take the responsibility for the backlog of the minutes. It was, you know, me not getting them completed in time for the agendas for the board.
Mr. Hamaday took responsibility for it, but I will say it was a staff issue, and we resolved that with staff issue, and it's been corrected.
Thank you. And then the last was the website has had some issues. Can you elaborate on what happened with the website and what the status is and what we can expect moving forward?
If I can, yes. The website experienced a problem with a plugin that would allow individuals to open a folder that contained files. And if you were trying to find minutes, et cetera, so they're slowly converting those files to a new plugin. So it'll take some time. We hope to have everything completed by next week. Some of the files are available already. It's just staffing, converting those files to the new plugins.
Thank you.
Motion and a second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We stand adjourned. Thank you.